Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Sri Gaurinitai Ki Jai. Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi Ki Jai. Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish Ki Jai. Go Premanand. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Okay. Hare Krishna. welcome to the second session. Srila Prabhupada, the Living Bhagavatam. And when I can pull this up on my computer in a second, we'll get down to where we were. We were doing health. And last night we finished at the point where Prabhupada had said many times not to take him to the hospital. And of course, the devotees followed that instruction very faithfully. So now today, we'll have a look, we'll continue on. Just looking at some of the illnesses that Prabhupada had, at least during the time that I was traveling with him. Of course, I assumed that those illnesses were all there previously as well. But as Prabhupada got older, of course, then naturally they were becoming more and more pronounced. So there were quite a few different bodily ailments that Prabhupada had to deal with during 1976 and early 1977. Toothache, I mentioned, high blood pressure, heart palpitations, kidney disease, flu, and you know, just an excess of mucus, bad digestion, and ultimately also just the weakness that comes from old age. So all of those things Prabhupada endured with stoic indifference and at the same time relentlessly pushed himself on despite his weakening bodily condition. For the servants, it was both distressing and impressive. Distressing because, of course, there was not that much that we could do. There were occasions when Prabhupada would call us in the room just to tell us that he was feeling some problem and then send us out again. He wouldn't ask for any, you know, particular assistance. He wouldn't suggest, you know, particular course of action, but he would just tell us that that was what was happening. So, you know, in those situations we felt very helpless. Then at the same time, you know, it was very impressive to see how Prabhupada was able to tolerate all these difficulties and just continue on preaching, you know, literally till the last breath. So we'll have a look at a few incidences of that. 1976, Prabhupada was in Fiji. This was on April the 29th. He'd just arrived there. And the local devotees, of course, they had arranged some programs for Prabhupada's preaching. And the local GBC at that time was Guru Kripa Maharaj. And Prabhupada's secretary was Pushtakrishna Swami. So they had a meeting on the 29th to discuss with Mr. Dayoji Punja, who was the main man in Fiji. He was organizing the building of a new temple there in Latoka. And the Punja family, of course, are practically one of the richest families in Fiji. So they're very influential. So the eldest brother was Mr. Dayoji Punja. And he was called into the room by the GBC and Prabhupada's personal secretary to discuss the programs that he had got proposed for the next few days. Despite his objections, they put pressure on him to cancel some that involved traveling to other parts of the island and to minimize most of the other programs in the hope that Prabhupada could translate and rest instead. But their coercive tactics disturbed Mr. Punja, and with encouragement from myself, he went to see Srila Prabhupada to get a final decision. So I saw what was going on. I didn't think it was proper. So when he came out, I told him, now you go and speak with Srila Prabhupada and see what he has to say personally. So Prabhupada became angry, and he immediately called for his secretary and GBC. Pushta Krishna explained that they were only trying to avoid inconveniencing Srila Prabhupada. But Prabhupada corrected him. For someone my age, the inconvenience is there simply in traveling. But I have accepted that willingly for the sake of preaching. Now we are here for the benefit of the local men. We are in their hands. So now you try to make arrangements for whatever programs Dayoji wants. We shall stay here as long as is required. It was a valuable lesson for Prabhupada's new secretary. This is one of the main difficulties in being on Prabhupada's personal team. And Pushta Krishna Swami is now beginning to understand that Prabhupada's servants are there to assist him. We are to see to his personal requirements and make life as easy as possible for him so that he can concentrate on his real business of spreading Krishna consciousness, especially through his book writing. Yet at the same time, assisting Prabhupada means having to make arrangements that we know will bring personal difficulty and inconvenience and even disruptions to his health. So it's easy then to get caught in seeming contradictions. But Prabhupada's preaching strategy means that the personal comfort and convenience is secondary. It is his servant's business to understand and serve his desire to preach, and not our own conception of providing him with protective relief. So it was a bit of a conundrum sometimes. You know, you were there to look after Prabhupada, to assist him to make his life easier. And at the same time, you had to make arrangements that you knew were going to cause him problems. But that was the way that Prabhupada wanted it. So you had to go along with that. So anyway, after a week in Fiji, we went to Honolulu. And we were there for 1 month. Prabhupada had gone there with the intention of increasing his writing. Because in 1975, there was a big crisis at the BBT here in Los Angeles. Prabhupada arrived, I think there were 17 or 18 volumes of books that had still not yet been published. Prabhupada was writing, but he was becoming very discouraged because the BBT weren't keeping up with him. So he ordered them that I'm here for 2 months. You publish all the backlog of books, every one, in those 2 months. And of course they said, but Prabhupada, that's impossible. And then Prabhupada told them, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So then to their credit, then Radha Balaba, he was the production manager, and Rameshwara was the trustee. They called all the devotees in the BBT together and put them on a 24-hour work schedule, shift system. The artists, you know, the compositors, the editors, Sanskrit, Bengali, English, like this, and typesetters, everything, layout people. And by the end of that 2 months, I think they managed to get 15 of those volumes actually into print. So Prabhupada was really happy. Then by 1976, at the Mayapur Festival, afterwards we were in Vrindavan, and that was April, early April. So then it was, they were trying to figure out Prabhupada's tour schedule for the summertime. And Rameshwara was there, so he suggested to Srila Prabhupada that in view of the fact that the BBT had now caught up with him, and we're only basically one volume behind, he promised Prabhupada that as you complete a volume, we will publish it within 1 month with all the paintings, everything, all complete. So he said, now we've caught up with you, so we want you to write more. And Prabhupada liked that. It was, you know, a bit of a competition between him and the BBT. And so he agreed he would spend 1 month in Hawaii, where there was no distractions from management or from visitors. It was nice and quiet, nice quarters that he had there in that temple. And so we went there. We'd spent 1 month. But at the same time, as Prabhupada was did in fact increase his writing up to about 6 or 7 times what he normally was writing, at the same time, he was having a lot of problems with his physical health. So this was on May the 4th. We'd just arrived there a couple of days before. So at 1 a.m., it's 1 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada rang his bell. I jumped out of my sleeping bag next door and went in, followed by Pushtakrishna Swami. Looking strained, Prabhupada informed us that he was ill and he would not take his walk or give the morning Bhagavatam class. He's having trouble again with uremia, using the bathroom every hour. His feet are badly swollen and he is suffering from dizzy spells. So this was an ongoing condition. I noted this just practically the second week that I was with Prabhupada. One day, just his hands and feet were very swollen up with fluid. Whilst I was massaging him, I pressed down on his foot, and it made a dint in his top of his foot, about a quarter of an inch deep, and it just stayed there. So this was from uric acid not being eliminated from his body because his kidney wasn't working properly. Later on, there was some diagnosis. Several diagnoses that confirmed that his kidney was either he had a kidney stone or he had a diseased kidney and it just wasn't working properly. So the symptom of that was this uremia. And what Prabhupada was doing to not exactly cure it but treat it was that he would take a half of a diuretic pill. He'd been given some diuretic pills by Dr. Patel in Bombay. So rather than take a full course, he would just take a half of the pill, and then when it had its effect, it makes you pass. So then it would drain the water out of the body. And when he got the effect, then he would stop taking the medicine. He did actually told us that actually this Western medicine, because it's very powerful, it was also causing him problems, the medicine. So he said that actually this medicine is medicine of the demons. He didn't like it, but he took it sometimes when he had to. So this was it, 1 o'clock in the morning. Prabhupada couldn't work. He was feeling very dizzy, and his swelling was there. So then amazingly, and yet so typically, after telling us this, he preached to the two of us on general points of philosophy for nearly an hour before sending us back to take rest. So 1 o'clock in the morning, but because we were there, he just got very enthusiastic and started preaching to us. I think just from the section of the Bhagavatam that he was working on at that moment. So he remained in his room throughout the morning. After breakfast, he took rest and he didn't ring or signal that he was ready for his massage until noon. So that was about a half hour later. He then rested again for a long time in the afternoon. And he took rest again early in the evening. Although he normally only sleeps 3 to 4 hours in any one day, when his body gets diseased, he makes the necessary adjustments to keep it going. There doesn't seem to be any question of good health for Srila Prabhupada. There's always something that is not right. But despite the hectic pace of his preaching, he is never neglectful. He deals as carefully with his body as with any other asset that Krishna has provided for his service. So, when necessary, then a few times Prabhupada took extra rest when he was feeling really ill. Otherwise, normally he would sleep 1 hour after breakfast, 1 hour after lunch, and maybe an hour or an hour and a half in the night time, and that was it. But you can see here, practically he was resting all day because of this uremia problem. So that was one particularly bad spell that he had there. About a month later, we went to New Vrindavan. And in New Vrindavan, again, Prabhupada was going on his morning walks, but there were a couple of days when he didn't actually give class, although he did go down into the temple room. So this particular day, June 24th, he was having heart palpitations. So because of his continued heart palpitations, Prabhupada didn't feel well enough to take his walk. Instead, he remained in his room, and he talked for a while with myself, Pushtakrishna, and Kirtananda Maharajas. But still, for the sake of the devotees, he went down to the temple to greet the deities and receive Guru Puja. And he also gave a class, but it was very short. So sometimes then Prabhupada had to adjust things according to his health, even though he had this determination to go out and preach. And one example of that was in late December 1975. I'd been with him about 3 weeks at that point, 3 or 4 weeks, and we were in Bombay. And they'd arranged some programs for Prabhupada in people's houses. So we'd driven into Bombay. We had to go up, I think, onto the 17th or 18th floor of a block of flats. It was a nice program, but it wasn't that well attended. There was probably only about, you know, a dozen people, 15 people there. And then afterwards, because it was late when we left, and after a long drive home, Prabhupada revealed that he was feeling too ill to continue going out on so many programs. He said that he wanted at least 1 week of complete rest. He will not even take his morning walks. And he only wants to eat fruits, milk, and khichdi. He looks exhausted and frail, but we are unable to help him in any useful way. Arrangements have been made to go to Australia for the Rath Yatra on January the 10th, but our plans may have to change due to Prabhupada's ill health. Moreover, some difficulty has arisen regarding Prabhupada's visa for there. So that was on the 20th of December. On the 21st, Prabhupada didn't take his morning walk. Missing Prabhupada on the beach, Dr. Patel arrived at his apartment with his son. So Dr. Patel, again, didn't see him. Came to Hare Krishna Land to find out why Prabhupada wasn't out walking. So he took a cardiograph reading and he gave Prabhupada some pills. His diagnosis is high blood pressure. Then in the evening, Prabhupada felt a little better and he ate some guava, 3 paratas, and a sabji that Harikesh cooked for him. As part of his cure, Prabhupada told us that for at least 1 week, he wants to be free of any appointments and visitors. Harikesh is doubtful that we will be able to enforce this rule. Prabhupada is too enthusiastic to stop preaching and too kind to turn away any unexpected guests. And this turned out to be the case. The very next day, Prabhupada wanted to know, where are all the visitors? So he just told us, nobody for a week, and then, you know, one day later, where I want somebody to preach to. That's so then, because in Australia they have their Rath Yatra. They used to have the Rath Yatra there at Christmas time or just afterwards in early January because that's summertime there. Originally, when we first started having Rath Yatra in Melbourne, we would have it at the proper time when they have it in India, which is usually around the end of June. But it's really cold at that time. And Prabhupada had come down in June of 74 for the Rath Yatra. It was very, very successful, but it was really, really cold. So the next year then, Madhavisa asked Srila Prabhupada if they could hold it in the summertime instead. Prabhupada said, yes, good idea. So now they were preparing for that. And then, because Prabhupada had this illness, it wasn't... clear whether he could travel or not. In fact, from Bombay, we did go down to South India on the 1st of January. We were there in Madras for 2 days. He held a couple of programs there. And then we spent about a week in Nellore, which was about 3 hours north from Madras. And then finally, we came back to Bombay on the 9th of January. And Madhavisa Swami phoned today. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj informed Srila Prabhupada, informed him that Prabhupada is not feeling well enough to travel the long distance to Melbourne. From India, it's about 13 or 14 hours travel, with a little bit of a break in Singapore. So it would have been quite a strain. So although extremely disappointed, Madhavisa withdrew his request for Prabhupada to attend. Despite his weak health, Prabhupada said that he was still willing to go if their Rath Yatra arrangements were dependent on his personal presence. Only after receiving Madhavisa's assurance that the festival would go on without him that he finally decided not to go. Prabhupada was more concerned that their preaching carry on unhampered than about his own comfort. So that was his mood. Preaching was first, and personal convenience, that was an afterthought. It was there, it was a factor, but the main thing was that the preaching had to go on under any circumstance. So as I mentioned, this kidney pains and uremia, this was a real problem. And this was an ongoing, reoccurring problem all the time, the year and a half that I was with Prabhupada. And of course, at the end, it became, you know, one of the major factors in Prabhupada's health completely breaking down. So December the 20th, then that day when he was 75 in Bombay, when he wasn't feeling well, there was swelling in his legs, feet, and his hands. To see his body puffed up with fluid is very disturbing. Nevertheless, Prabhupada went on his walk, continuing with the education of Dr. Patel and other devotees. During his massage, I pressed gently on Prabhupada's foot with my thumb to show him the swelling. It left an indentation for several minutes. Prabhupada said it was due to uremia, a toxic condition caused by waste products in the blood, which are normally eliminated in the urine. It makes it very difficult for him to climb the steps to his apartment when returning from the temple. Yet he tolerates the inconvenience without complaint, and he dismissed the sight of the dent with a smile and a shake of his head. He just laughed about it. So then the next day, because Prabhupada didn't go on his walk, Dr. Patel came with his son. He took his cardiograph reading and gave his diagnosis of high blood pressure. Prabhupada rested in the morning. He didn't take breakfast, and he ate only a morsel for lunch, complaining of dizziness from the medicine that Dr. Patel had given him. He remarked that modern drugs are medicines for the demons. Prabhupada rarely goes to a doctor, although if by some arrangement one comes to him, he doesn't refuse their help. Disease has to be treated, of course, but as far as he's concerned, chanting Hare Krishna is the best cure. So 2 days later, on the 23rd of December, Prabhupada is feeling a little stronger, and the swelling in his body has gone down because of the diuretic pills that Dr. Patel supplied. But Prabhupada didn't take all the pills prescribed. Only after taking half a tablet, as soon as he got the desired effect, he stopped taking the medication. So for the next 3 or 4 months, he wasn't so bad with that condition. Whenever it showed some sign of coming, he'd just take a half of that diuretic and it would, you know, eliminate that extra fluid. But then when we got to Hawaii, then it became, again, you know, a major problem. So this is on May the 8th. On maybe the 4th, as I'd mentioned, he had called us in the middle of the night. He had dizziness and kidney pains and this swelling. So on May the 8th, Prabhupada is now feeling a little better. For the last couple of days, he's been taking half tablets of his diuretic medicine, and the swelling in his hands and feet has disappeared. As soon as he got the desired effect, he stopped taking the pills. Then, a couple of months later, we were in New York. Prabhupada arrived there on July the 9th. That was a memorable visit because that was the first New York Rath Yatra, and it was the last visit to New York that Prabhupada actually made. And so it was exactly 10 years to the month, practically, that he had started ISKCON in New York. So it was a, you know, bit of a celebration. Just prior to going to New York, we'd been in Washington, D.C., and the devotees had baked a 10-year birthday cake for ISKCON. And Prabhupada, we had a special program, big cake, you know, about a meter across and about 6 inches deep, filled with mango and fruit and all kinds of things and cream and everything. It was nice. Prabhupada cut the cake. Actually, on the icing on the top of the cake, they'd made like a motif from icing sugar, shaped like cows, kind of going all around the outer edge. So when Prabhupada cut the cake, I noticed that he cut around the cow. He didn't cut through it. And then that was in the temple room. He just kind of cut it, and then he put the knife down. He gave a nice talk. And then afterwards in his room, a few of the senior devotees gathered, and then they brought the cake in, and they divided it up, and Prabhupada was passing it out, and he had some of the cake himself. Anyway, so it was the 10-year anniversary. Prabhupada returned to New York. And then on July the 11th, Prabhupada rang the servant's bell at 2:15 a.m. I jumped out of my sleeping bag, entered his sitting room, and offered my obeisances. I looked up at Srila Prabhupada sitting at his desk, but he wasn't working. He looked very ill. He was gaunt, and he complained of severe chest pains and an inability to either rest or work. He had already changed his diet to simple khichdi because of these symptoms, but the problem has persisted. Seeing Prabhupada in this condition is very trying, because there's nothing that any of us can do to alleviate his difficulty. Although he called me in to tell me that there was something wrong, I couldn't suggest any remedy, and nor did he ask me to try to do anything to relieve him. After a few minutes, he sent me out again to take rest. We are helpless in this situation. Prabhupada has little faith that a doctor can do anything, and he prefers to simply rely on Krishna. That's a special relationship which we can only be observers to. So that was on the 11th. On the 15th of July, Prabhupada went down to Gita Nagari. In those days, it wasn't called Gita Nagari. It was just called the Philadelphia Farm. So it was about a five-hour trip. Prabhupada went down there on the one of the Radha Damodar buses. So it was the first time that he traveled, actually, on one of those Greyhound buses. He liked it, but afterwards, when we came back, he came back in a car, because he said, going on the bus, he was bouncing, and it was causing too much strain on his heart. But still, you know, on the bus ride, he said, this is a dream come true. Because the Radha Damodar Party, they were Prabhupada's, you know, main book distributors in those days. 100 brahmacharis, 7 buses, 12 vans, and selling something like $50,000 worth of books every month, putting it into the BBT. So it was a big thing. Anyway, we got to Gita Nagari. We had a look around the place, and Prabhupada gave a nice talk. Then, in the middle of the night, again, Prabhupada rang the bell. When I entered his room, he was sitting behind his low desk with his dictaphone before him, but he wasn't using it. He was ashen, and he told me that he was experiencing severe kidney pain, and he could not translate. It was the same problem that he'd had a few days before. This time he agreed when I asked if we could call a doctor on our return to New York. He wasn't confident that it would do any good, but he said that there was undoubtedly something wrong, and so he had no objection. So this means it's serious. Otherwise, Prabhupada never usually agrees to get medical help. So then the next day, then we drove back to New York, and upon our return from the farm, the devotees contacted a Gujarati doctor, Dr. Bhagat, who is a life member. He arrived just after Prabhupada had an interview with API, and he examined him. He diagnosed very high blood pressure and a weak heart. He said that the uremia problem, which makes Prabhupada's hands and feet swell, means that his body is producing too much water, and that was probably as the result of a kidney stone. So he prescribed 5 different kinds of medicines. Lasix, which is a diuretic to eliminate the excess water, which was to be taken once a day with breakfast. Curflex, an antibiotic for the kidney infection, to be ingested 4 times a day. Parafon Forte, a pain reliever. Valium, a psychotropic relaxant, and a sleeping pill. He also advised Prabhupada not to take any salt or sugar. So Prabhupada allowed us to purchase the medicine, but I have strong doubts that he will take them, and I know that he will never agree to a diet of no salt. He always insists that there must be some taste to his prasadam, otherwise he won't eat it. So July 17th, the next day, sure enough, Prabhupada has refused to either adjust his diet or take the different medicines. I put them all on his desk. Prabhupada, take them away. He said that the anxiety of managing ISKCON is the cause of his pain, and that the GBC should learn how to relieve him of it. So that was it. He didn't take any of the medicines, just chanted, that was all. So that was July. Then in August, of course, from New York, we went to London. In London, he got, again, very, very sick. He did a big initiation in New York, over 200 devotees. And the next day, he got a heavy, like, flu-like cold. I noticed that. Whenever Prabhupada did a big initiation, then he would always get sick within a day or two afterwards. Something would come. So in New York, he got like this flu. And the GBC actually, they were having like a North American GBC meeting just prior to the Rath Yatra. So as part of their resolution, they came to see Srila Prabhupada and requested him to stay in New York until he got his health back. But when Prabhupada told them that, no, you know, in London they've made these arrangements, so I have to go. Because on the airlines, they advise you, if you have a heavy cold or a flu, you don't fly. Because the mucus and the, you know, with the pressurized cabins, creates a lot of problems. You get very dizzy, you throw up. It's very distressing. Prabhupada, though, insisted, you know, that he was going to go. And it was on that occasion, when we were leaving New York, the GBC had come into his room, just, you know, we'd already packed. And they came again to try to make another attempt to persuade him not to fly. Prabhupada walked out the door. He got in the elevator. A few members of the GBC squeezed in with him and myself and actually pushed to Krishna. He was left behind. He dropped off the party at that point. But as we were going down, Prabhupada just, he looked at us. He said, I simply want this benediction that I can preach to the last breath like Arjuna. So that was it. There was no question of arguing with that one. So we flew over, and then on the plane, you know, night flight, I think they lower the temperatures a little bit. And he just, all night long, he was just coughing up this thick yellow mucus continuously. He was lying down most of the time. When we got to London, he actually asked us to get him a wheelchair to get him off the plane. When Prabhupada asked for those kinds of things, it was really serious. And Prabhupada was a very self-sufficient person. He wouldn't, you know, take help from anyone unless it was absolutely necessary. So when he was asking for a wheelchair, you know, we knew this is really, really serious. So Gurudas was the sannyasi at that time. He had flown over with us. So as soon as we landed, he went off the plane and he tried to arrange for this wheelchair. After a few minutes, Prabhupada got fed up of sitting down. He just wanted to get off the plane. So, of course, Heathrow Airport, the corridors are really long, like miles of corridors. So Prabhupada just started walking. And he was so sick and dizzy that he was actually swaying from side to side as he was walking down the corridor. So we were walking right next to him just to steady him. He didn't say anything. He just kept walking. And then, after we'd gone some distance, Gurudas finally came back and he informed Prabhupada that the airlines were willing to supply a wheelchair, but only to the aircraft. I mean, there's some stupid rule which they refused to bring the wheelchair down the corridor to Prabhupada. He had to walk, you know, he's in a condition, he needs a wheelchair, but he had to walk back to the aircraft to get the wheelchair. Completely insane. Anyway, Prabhupada refused. He just shook his head and he kept on walking. And what happened was that two policemen, they appeared behind us and they kept like a discreet distance, maybe about 10 meters behind. But apparently they were informed that there's a potential problem here. So they were just walking behind. Again, they didn't say anything to us, but they just observed and kept up with us. Anyway, so then we got through customs. There was a kind of a funny incident that happened there. when we got there, Prabhupada sat down and I took his passport forward. And there was this young guy there, probably about my age, you know, 24, 25 years old. And I took Prabhupada's passport out and he had a double passport. He had his old passport, which had his British visa in it. And then he had a new section that had been added onto it. So I told the fellow behind the counter, immigration, he said, now the visa is in the back section right here. So ignoring me completely, he put the passport down and then he opened it up very slowly, one page at a time. He was showing me who was the boss, right? I was telling him where the visa was. He was going to show me. He'll find it in his own time. So I got so frustrated, I took it off him. I opened it to the visa. I put it down on the counter. I said, it's right there. So he got really, he completely lost it. He grabbed his rubber stamp and he shoved it in my face. He said, here, why don't you stamp it too? Go on, stamp it. I was amazed. You know, this is the immigration officer, right? And then I saw that the police were looking at him. He noticed them and they weren't happy. So then he kind of backed off a little bit. So then he stamped the thing and, did up the passport. And as he's handing me the passport back again, he said, here, ain't he the bloke that wrote the Bhagavad Gita? I was amazed. I mean, Prabhupada was sitting over on the side there. Even if you see a picture of somebody, in a book or something, if you see them in real life, generally, you might not recognize them. But I couldn't understand how this guy knows that Prabhupada wrote the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So I was surprised. I said, yes. I said, how did you know? So he said, I bought one in Oxford Street. The glories of book distribution. So I thought, well, anyway, this is a chance for this man to redeem himself. So I told him, we have our place at Lechmore Heath. Prabhupada's going to be lecturing on the Bhagavad Gita there for the next few days. So why don't you come and visit? So, oh, okay. I don't think he came. At least I didn't see him. But anyway, it ended on a friendly note. But at the same time, Prabhupada was sitting there really, really sick. When we came out, there were a lot of devotees there to greet him. Jai Tirtha was the GBC at that time. And I just told them, no reception. Let's get the car and let's go straight to the manor. So we got in the car. It was a Rolls Royce that one Mr. Patel had provided. And we jumped in and off we drove. Because in those days, they didn't have the M25, which is the London Ring Road. So it was a kind of a funny route. And it took about an hour and a half or hour and a quarter like that to get to the manor. So on the way there, we had to stop a couple of times. And Prabhupada was sick. He threw up. We had to stop. He opened the door and he threw up. And it was just yellow mucus, thick. Nothing. No, because he hadn't eaten, so there was no foodstuff or anything. And anyway, so when we got to the manor, that was it. He just immediately went to take rest. And virtually speaking, he was just resting for the first two or three days that we were there. And nor did he eat practically anything either. He stopped taking his massage just before we left New York. And again, in London, he didn't take his massage. Then when he did take his massage, he wasn't taking a full bath. He was just using a damp sponge to wipe himself down. So it was very difficult. And Prabhupada told us, he said, just take me back to Bombay. Yeah, because the weather in England also, not that conducive. It was sunny, but it was still quite cold. And so he did discuss about leaving England and going directly back to Bombay because the weather was better there and it suited him. Then Bhagavan Prabhu flew in from France and he sweet-talked Prabhupada into into staying and continuing with his schedule, which was after London. He was due to go to New Mayapur in France. And he explained to him, the weather's very nice, it's very warm, and you'll be very healthy and happy there. So Prabhupada agreed. He didn't really want to, disrupt the tour, but because he was so sick, he was thinking of it. Anyway, so then we did go to France, and it did prove to be very efficacious for him. He kind of recovered a fair bit. The mucus, was reduced. Prabhupada adjusted his diet somewhat. When we had left Bombay in April, then he had told me, now you get some neem leaves and you dry them out on the roof and then mash them up, make a powder, and you bring that with us. So I'd done that. I got some branches, put them on the roof, left them for 4 or 5 days, and then stripped all the leaves off, ground them all up, and I had a nice bag full of ground neem leaves. And that was in April. So May, June, July, Prabhupada never even mentioned about them. And I actually at one point thought, well, you know, I may as well just toss them out because we're not going to use them. Then I thought better of it. And I was glad I did. Because when we got to France in early August, Prabhupada called me and he said, where's that neem powder? So he hadn't forgotten. It was 4 months later, but he'd still... And then he gave me some instructions how to make, I think it was like some small like patties, you know, shallow fried. And he said, you put 1/3 neem in the mix. So I did that, and they came out deep green. And then when Prabhupada ate them, he kind of, he ate one, he said, oh. He said, maybe we used too much neem. But then in the afternoon, he called me in again. He said, actually, he said, that was very good. It was very good for my digestion, so you keep on making it. So like that, he was making some adjustments. Gradually, he was getting his strength a little back, and he started to take his walk again. He hadn't had his walk in London. In France, because it was a bit chilly in the morning, then he didn't take the walk then, but he started taking his walk in the afternoon. So that was very nice. It became like a transcendental event because devotees were gradually arriving from all over Europe. There was going to be the installation of Krishna and Balaram on the last day there, August the 6th. And also Prabhupada had initiations. So every day, you know, there was 20 or 30 more devotees there. And everybody would eagerly await for Prabhupada to come out in the afternoon. He would walk around the grounds a little bit, look around New Mayapur, and then he took to sitting down under this tree. One day it was under a tree, and then out on this grassy verge the other days, and everybody would sit around him. It was very nice. It was like, you know, that picture of Krishna in the forest in Vrindavan with all the cowherd boys sitting around facing him. So Prabhupada would sit there, all the devotees would gather around, and then he was speaking a little bit, you know, from Bhagavad Gita, etc. So that was nice. Then from there, he traveled to Tehran. So at that time, we had a small place there, some householder devotees. Atreya Rishi was there with his wife and son. Navayovana was there with his wife and son. Dayananda and Nandarani were there with their two kids. And Paribraja Kacharya Swami was there. And Gyanagamya, he was there. He was a brahmachari at that time. So they had this, you know, little preaching center. In the daytime, as you know, they were all mainly householders, so they were all working. So Atreya Rishi was, he had started a branch of Arthur Young, the accountancy firm. He started a branch for them in Tehran. Dayananda was a programmer for IBM. And I don't know what the others were doing, but they were earning some kind of living. And in the evenings and at the weekends, they would preach to people. But it had to, of course, be very low-key because it was Iran. Because this was prior to the revolution. This was, you know, the Shah was still there. But they were doing some amazing stuff. Paribraja Kacharya was going to the Shah of Iran's palace 2 or 3 times a week and teaching Hatha Yoga to the Shah's daughter and his niece. Somehow or another, the niece had had some drug problem, and then to help get over it, she took up yoga. So he was teaching yoga, and he was so good at it that she, you know, recommended that her cousin, who was the Shah's daughter, that she also do it. So Paribraja Kacharya was the first white man to be allowed into the inner chambers of the Shah of Iran's palace in something like 2,000 years or something. You know, Persia. Anyway, it was quite interesting what they were doing there. So Prabhupada went there. He spent a week there. But as soon as we arrived, of course, Tehran is up in the mountains a little bit. It's a fairly high elevation. And as soon as we got there, then immediately this swelling in his hands and legs came back. High blood pressure, you know, the whole thing. So still, you know, it was hot, very hot, about 90 degrees every day. Prabhupada loved it. It was just the kind of weather that he liked. So apart from that swelling, he did improve his health a little bit. But still, you know, there were problems. So on August the 11th, we observed a belated fast for Lord Balaram's appearance day. It had been the day before. but the devotees had failed to notice, so we all broke the fast. So then Prabhupada said that we had to do it the next day. So we had that, but Prabhupada took his regular meals. So for him, because his health was so delicate, just to, you know, miss one meal would have been a problem. So he was adjusting a bit like that. So that was August the 11th. On the 13th evening, we arrived back in Bombay. And then on the 14th, then Dr. Patel showed up. He came in the early morning, and he was expecting Srila Prabhupada would go out walking on the beach. But because of the swelling, it was still persisting. Then Prabhupada told him that he wasn't feeling up to it, and he spent the next half hour just preaching. So that was the occasion when he told Dr. Patel what his philosophy was about not taking any medicine like that. So anyway, later on then, in December of 1976, again back in Bombay. So since we've been here in Bombay, this is like 4 months later, Prabhupada has been complaining again about his kidneys and the swelling in his legs. Dr. Patel has been coming every morning to walk on the roof, and he told him that he has arranged for another doctor to come and take some blood and urine samples. It seems that he had mentioned it a couple of days ago to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had agreed to see the man at that time. But today, he said that he didn't think that he would bother. Immediately, Dr. Patel became agitated, and he began to insist very loudly, "Oh, you are letting me down. You've gone against your word. I have gone to so much trouble to bring this man to you." He was actually trying to chastise Srila Prabhupada a little bit and make him feel obliged, you know, to accept this other doctor coming in. All the devotees present on the roof became quite upset with his speaking to Prabhupada in such an offensive manner, and we began to tell him to keep quiet. So then he began to complain to Prabhupada about us, and he was saying, "These young boys should not talk to me like this. I am a respectable doctor." Anyway, so Prabhupada, to keep the peace, you know, more than any other reason, he agreed to allow him to bring his doctor friend. So they arrived at about 8:30, and they went into Prabhupada's sitting room. As soon as he went in, then Dr. Patel shut the door and locked it from the inside so that we couldn't get in there. So he had Prabhupada on his own with his friend. And after about half an hour, then they came out and off they went with their blood and urine samples. I went in. I asked Prabhupada about the incident. He said, "I don't care for medicine. But," he said, "undoubtedly there's some disease. So I just took it was Krishna's mercy that this man has come. All right, let him do whatever he wants." But again, Prabhupada several times told Dr. Patel, "I want to die without medicine." So then on the 27th of December, today an Ayurvedic Kaviraj came. So we were trying. They were, you know, Dr. Patel was there with his allopathic stuff. So then this Ayurvedic Kaviraj came. After speaking with Prabhupada, then we set off by car to go to the man's house and then his clinic. So Prabhupada took me, and then we went with this man in this car. So it was a long drive right to the other side of Bombay. The man's house was a very small flat in a block with tiny cramped up rooms. Prabhupada commented that they paid thousands of rupees to live in this horrible small place. The clinic turned out to be his father's house, which was again another very small house. As we walked in, I noticed that there was a dog sleeping under the bed. I was thinking, this man's a Ayurvedic doctor. He's got a dog living inside his house, you know. Anyway, that was Bombay. Prabhupada was offered a seat, and after some time, the father and son consulted, and they prescribed various medicines and a diet for Prabhupada to take. The diet consisted of simply boiled rice and certain fruits, dalia, which is cracked wheat, as well as a quarter of a liter of milk to be taken 3 times a day, plus 4 types of pills to be taken twice a day. So from there, then we visited an Ayurvedic pharmacy belonging to the father, who was very old, to get the medicines, and then we returned to the temple. So this whole endeavor took like several hours, you know, first to the guy's house, then to his clinic, then to his father's place, and the Ayurvedic pharmacy. It was 2 or 3 hours before we got back. And I was really wondering, you know, Prabhupada's really going to a lot of trouble here, you know, to consult with this man. So then we returned to the temple. As soon as Prabhupada sat down, I asked him if he would actually follow the diet. Prabhupada shook his head and laughingly said, "I eat what I like. Even as a boy, I only ate what I liked, nothing else. You can offer me thousands of preparations, but I'll only eat what I like." He took the pills once and abandoned them. So he got into so much trouble, and then, you know, he didn't follow the diet and he threw the pills out. So during the massage, he began to comment on what nasty conditions people are living in. Small houses, all broken down. And he said this is the middle class, not even the general workers. He said he had offered this Kaviraj the opportunity to come and live on our Hyderabad farm with his whole family and set up a complete pharmacy there. But the man has declined. The whole family is practically living in one tiny room, but still they won't move. Prabhupada condemned this horrible city life as a good example of what Kali Yuga means. It is so bad, he said, that a man cannot even trust his own wife anymore, what to speak about anybody else. So December the 30th, 1976, a couple of days later, again, another visit from another doctor. So this evening, one Dr. Shiv Sharma, another Kaviraj, came. He is actually an impressive man. Although late in years, about 73 or 74, he has a very sharp and attentive mind, and he knows his business. He has lectured in various countries about Ayurvedic medicines, and he has come to see if he can help Srila Prabhupada. So apparently he was one of the top guys in the Ayurvedic field in India at that time. So he was shown the results of the blood tests which arrived this morning. So this was the results from Dr. Patel's endeavors. They sent the blood test back to Srila Prabhupada. So after doing his examination, he told Prabhupada that practically everything was all right, except one of his kidneys was badly diseased. So he advised that he should not take any fat, ghee, or salt. And he gave certain medicines and told Prabhupada that he should rest completely for at least 2 weeks. Sri Sri Ganatai Ki Jai. Rukmini Dwakadish Ki Jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadradevi Ki Jai. Now we have a choice. We can either continue with this kirtan, or you can have your regular evening instrumental kirtan. So I'm leaving it all to you to decide what you want to do. Shall I continue on? Anybody that wants to continue on, put your hands up. Anybody that wants to do the regular arati? Greta, Haribol. Okay, so you're outvoted. So we'll continue on. We'll probably go until about 9 o'clock. So, he told Prabhupada, you rest completely for 2 weeks, don't speak with anybody, and don't fly anymore. Prabhupada wasn't bothered about the flying bit because he didn't really like flying on aeroplanes that much anyway. He much preferred to travel, at least in India, on the train railway system. So Prabhupada has agreed, at least tentatively, to follow these recommendations. So that was the 30th. So on the 31st, Prabhupada is attempting to follow the diet, but he's still taking ghee. After a lunch of boiled food, he complained that he cannot eat without salt or ghee. He said eating boiled food is the same as starving. I tried to persuade him, but Prabhupada, if you can just cut out the ghee, then you may get a little better. Otherwise, if you continue with it, your kidney is going to become very bad. Then I shall die. What is that? Better to die by eating. If I starve, then I shall die also. So, if you set before me a plate of boiled food, that is starving. I cannot eat it. So that was it. You know, the diet was out the window also. He also complained that the medicine was taking away his appetite. So it looks like he'll continue in the way that he always has. So that, again, same thing, no diet, throw the pills out and just chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada doesn't appear to be too much bothered by any sickness that he gets. He seems resigned to the fact that his body is very old and is not going to last very much longer, no matter what adjustments are made. So why should he put himself to any unnecessary discomfort just to prolong his bodily existence? So that seemed to be his general mood. So that kidney problem, that was ongoing. Very serious. I don't know. Is there anybody here that's ever had a kidney problem? Yeah. I've always been told that kidney problems are probably the most painful thing that you can ever experience. I have a godbrother, Sadadanya. He got a kidney stone in Calcutta. So they put him in the hospital. He had it taken out. And then afterwards I saw him when he came out. I said, so, you know, what happened? So he said, well, he said, they have a special ward. It's just kidney patients. So I said, how is that? So he said, well, it's so painful. It doesn't matter how many painkillers that they give you. It doesn't make any difference. So everybody is just screaming all day. So he said they put them all in one ward. They can all scream together and they don't disturb any of the other patients. And I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj also once had a kidney stone in Bombay. And he collapsed. He fainted. They had to rush him to the hospital. Prabhupada actually took an hour's drive in the jeep just to go to the hospital just to check him and see how he was doing. So anyway, you know, kidney disease, very, very painful. I have another godbrother, Chidahari, in Australia. One time I got a call about 10 o'clock at night. He's really ill. Come and, you know, see what's happening. And he was practically rolling on the ground in agony. And he had a kidney stone. He thought he was going to die. And we rushed him off to the hospital. They did the operation. They took out a kidney stone as big as a peanut. So he told me, he said, I thought I was going to die. It was so painful. So Prabhupada had a diseased kidney, but just chant Hare Krishna, that's all. He was just tolerating it. So another thing that I noticed when I first joined Prabhupada's party was that his teeth also were not good. When I was made his permanent servant in early December, in Vrindavan. Then one of the duties, of course, was after he ate, then he had to go and clear his plate away, wipe the table and take everything away. So as you were doing that, Prabhupada would take out a toothpick and he would start to clean his teeth with a toothpick before going into the bathroom to wash it out. So as he poked his teeth, you know, he would spit out bits of prasadam and he'd wipe it up. It was kind of nice, you know, to be in that situation. But I saw when he put the toothpick in his mouth, he put it between his teeth and his teeth would open like this. They'd start moving apart. And I was surprised and Prabhupada just laughed. He saw when I was looking at his teeth. He just laughed. Anyway, so before I came on the party at late November, Prabhupada had been in Mauritius, October time. So when he was in Mauritius, he got very severe toothache. Now up until this point, all his life, Prabhupada had done this neem danta. It means they get a neem twig, and you chew the twig, and then you clean your teeth with the twig. And in 1973, when Prabhupada came to Melbourne, as soon as he arrived, Shrutakirti Prabhu was the servant at that time. He came out to the Brahmachari ashram and he asked us, can you get me some twigs from a gum tree? Because there's no neem trees there at that time in Australia, but Prabhupada knew there's gum trees there. So he wanted us to get him a batch of twigs so that Prabhupada could clean his teeth with these twigs. So that was his standard. And I had a little bit of an incident about that before I joined Prabhupada's party. The first time I went to Mayapur in 1975 was for the Gaur Purnima festival. I'd never been to India before. And so as soon as we arrived in Mayapur, then of course the main feature of the festival was Srila Prabhupada, you know, being there. And we all volunteered to do different services, you know, cleaning Prabhupada's rooms in the Lotus building. So I was assigned to do Prabhupada's bathroom. So when I went in, I saw lying on the sink, there was these twigs, you know, all chewed up at one end. One of them was, anyway. And I thought, wow, this is, you know, Prabhupada's tooth twig. You know, he's actually chewed on this twig. So I grabbed it. I was thinking it was finished because it was all chewed up. So I'm standing there chewing on Prabhupada's tooth twig, you know, thinking, you know, this is really nectar. Prabhupada's actually chewed this himself. And then Nanda Rani came in and she said, "What are you doing?" She said, "That's Prabhupada's, you know, he uses that for his teeth." I said, "Well, it looked like it had just been abandoned." She said, "No, he uses the thing for, you know, a few days." Anyway, so that was the situation. Prabhupada was using the twigs. But when he got to Mauritius in late 75, October, he got severe toothache. And as a result of that, he couldn't actually, his teeth had no strength in them anymore. And he couldn't chew the twigs anymore. So at that point then, he made up his own formula for toothpaste. And he had Harikesh make up this batch of toothpaste. Prabhupada started using a toothbrush. And he was very pleased with the results. And in fact, later on, as you'll see, he told us that on account of this toothpaste, he said, "All my teeth want to fall out. But on account of this toothpaste, they're being forced to stay in." So anyway, we were in Bombay, December 75, and we were out in the morning walk on Juhu Beach. So pausing for a moment, Prabhupada recalled his recent trip to Africa and Mauritius. He said, "In Mauritius, I was suffering so much from dental pain, but I never went to the dentist. I invented my medicine, and it cured it." So everybody smiled in admiration. Prabhupada seems to know nearly everything. He was referring to his own toothpaste recipe. That was one of the first duties that I was given when I was added onto the party, was to make up a new batch of Prabhupada's toothpaste. So the recipe is, it was a combination of ground yellow mustard seed, salt, calcium carbonate, eucalyptus oil, camphor, menthol, and oil of wintergreen. Many devotees are now eagerly making it for themselves, and Prabhupada asked if they liked it. He grinned when Harikesh assured him, "Oh yes, it's the best." And you can still get that. Hari Vilas Prabhu up in Seattle, he has a company called Uncle Harry's. And he makes Prabhupada's toothpaste formula. But he makes it in a dry powder. Whereas when we made it for Prabhupada, we would make it into a paste like that. So anyway, Prabhupada's teeth were a problem, and when we went on the last world tour, then when we got, just after we left here, Los Angeles, we went to Detroit. So whilst we were in Detroit, this was on June 15th, Prabhupada started complaining about getting some toothache, but still, you know, he went on his morning walk. 2 days later, we'd gone to Toronto. So Prabhupada's toothache is far worse. His face is beginning to swell, and he didn't take much for his breakfast. Jagadish, who was the GBC at that time, asked him if he had a headache. Prabhupada shook his head. He said, "No, but there is some pain. My teeth are now useless. So it is all rotten now. Sometimes it becomes acute. There is no strength in the teeth. Some of them, 50%, have already fallen, and therefore I cannot eat." So he's saying all of his teeth were rotten. It was just a question of letting them fall out. Prabhupada hasn't taken any remedial measure. He is simply tolerating the pain. I asked him a little later if we could get some painkiller or something from India, but he refused. He said, "No, don't worry, it will be all right." So the next day, 18th of June, after taking breakfast, Prabhupada slept until noon. His face is now badly swollen. That means it was completely infected. Yeah, his jaw must have been completely infected. And it was visible. You could see his face swelled out. And he has severe toothache, but he refuses to visit the dentist. "Better to let it fall out by itself," he said, "because a dentist will simply want to extract them all." He simply is sucking on an occasional clove to help deaden the pain. It is yet another amazing display of his bodily detachment. Any ordinary man would be in agony, completely disturbed mentally, and complaining all the time. But Prabhupada sits quietly and tolerates it without so much as a murmur. So then later in the same day, June the 18th, despite this condition, but being Friday evening, and because of Prabhupada's presence, there was a good turnout from the Indian community for the initiation ceremony. So despite this discomfort from his tooth, Prabhupada spoke strongly for 20 minutes from the instructions of Lord Rishabhdev on the importance of using the human form of life to rise above the animal tendencies to the platform of brahminical life by the process of tapasya. So, you know, his face is swollen out. He still went down, gave the lecture. He met with people in his room. He was preaching. Everything went on as normal. So then June the 19th, Prabhupada's face is still quite swollen from the bad tooth, but he has not mentioned the problem except when someone else brings it to his attention. He remains tolerant and transcendental, and he does not allow his preaching schedule to be affected in any way. Then later on, Prabhupada was invited to the home of one of our Indian devotees, Subha Vilas Prabhu. And Prabhupada, I think it was about a half an hour or so's drive to his house. He lived in Scarborough. So Prabhupada had his afternoon nap. Then he went for this gathering. There was about 80 or 90 devotees at the house there. So because of the swelling in his mouth, Prabhupada first had the devotees perform kirtan. And then he requested his sannyasis and GBCs to say a few words instead of speaking himself. So that was the 19th. June 23rd, it was a codicy. Prabhupada said very little on his walk, and the class was short. He's experiencing disturbing heart palpitations, and his uremia has caused his legs and feet to swell again. Same problem coming up again. It was a strain for him to be even out. Thankfully, his toothache seems to have disappeared, and his face is now no longer swollen. During the day, he rested a lot and did not see anyone. Next month, exactly 1 month later, Prabhupada had arrived in London. Hari Kesh had just come back on the party at that time. When I first joined the party in November of 75, Hari Kesh was the cook, and he was transcribing Prabhupada's Bhagavatam dictations. Then, early February, he was given sannyas, and he was sent off to preach. He was actually supposed to come and join the Radha Damodar party in America, but en route, he landed in London. Alanath was there, and he was just about to go, I think, to Hungary to do some program in some yoga studio there. They'd been invited. So he went there, and that was how he got involved in the Eastern European preaching program. So then he stayed in Europe, preaching in Eastern Europe for some time. Then in July, Pushtakrishna Swami, who had been the secretary for 4 months, he dropped off the party, and we flew to London, and Hari Kesh came back on the party as Prabhupada's secretary. So anyway, he was shocked to see Prabhupada was missing a tooth since the last time that he had seen him. Hari Kesh asked him what had happened. I had presumed that it was the tooth that had given him so much trouble in Toronto, but Prabhupada hadn't even mentioned it. To Hari Kesh's inquiry, he simply laughed. My teeth are all rotten and want to fall out, but on account of this toothpaste, they are being forced to remain. His fortitude is inconceivable. What ordinary man could endure the pain and loss of a whole tooth and not mention a word of it? So that was July. 2 weeks later, we arrived in Bombay, August the 13th. So on the 15th morning, Prabhupada rang his buzzer about 5 o'clock time. I entered his room, offered my obeisances, and looked up and got a shock. Prabhupada was smiling, revealing a gap in his mouth where a tooth had been the night before. With mixed dismay and surprise, I asked, Srila Prabhupada, what happened to your tooth? Without saying anything, Prabhupada reached down and he pulled open the drawer of his desk. The tooth was lying inside the drawer. during the night, it had either fallen out or Srila Prabhupada had pulled it out. He'd simply put it in the drawer and then gone on with his work. I was amazed and concerned. Another tooth gone, and Prabhupada had not said a word. But then, as I sat before him, another thought flashed through my mind. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, I recalled that because Maharaj Prataparudra was unable to personally associate with Lord Chaitanya, he obtained a piece of the Lord's clothing, which he worshipped as if it were Lord Chaitanya himself. It occurred to me that at some point in the future, my personal service to Srila Prabhupada would stop. However, if I had that tooth, I could worship it and get the same benefit. But I was torn. I knew full well that the spiritual master is never to be asked for anything. This was the first rule that was drummed into my head by Hari Kesh when I joined the party. You know, that you're in a privileged position being with Srila Prabhupada. People give him things all the time. You know, there's the Maha Maha Prasadam. You never take anything. You never ask Prabhupada for anything. We're here to serve Prabhupada, not the other way around. So that was, you know, very solidly established rule. So now I was looking at that tooth, and it was in Prabhupada's, you know, in the drawer there, and I was thinking, you know, it would be very nice to have it. At the same time, I had this conflict because I knew full well I'm not supposed to ask for anything. But at the same time, I also realized that within a second or two, he would close the drawer and the tooth would disappear into the bowels of the desk. And I thought, once it goes back in there, then, you know, there's no question of asking, you know, for him to open it up again or anything. So it was like a snap decision. So I took the decision and hoped that I wasn't being offensive. Srila Prabhupada, do you think that I could have that tooth? Prabhupada didn't say a word. Reaching into the drawer, he picked the tooth up, and with a smile, he dropped it into my hand. I was in ecstasy, with relief and excitement surging through me. I offered my obeisances and ran into my own room, eager to give it a closer inspection. The tooth, which is a lower canine, is astonishing. A huge cavity has eaten away more than half the tooth at the point where it entered into the gum. Bits of prasadam, spices and the like, were lodged inside, as if some squirrel had stored them away for a rainy day. How many more of his teeth must be in the same condition, I can only speculate. And how he is able to tolerate such a condition is inconceivable. I mean, this one tooth, it had a huge hole in it. And I thought, you know, practically all of his teeth must be in the same condition, but Prabhupada was not doing anything. So I carefully put the tooth in a bag with other pieces of his paraphernalia that I've saved up. When the right time comes, I'll worship it and thus keep up my direct service to His Divine Grace's transcendental body. So I do actually have that tooth. It's in my room at the moment. And I do a little puja every day. I bathe it and put some sandalwood paste on it and a flower and do a little arati. So that's nice. And I showed that tooth to Shyamasunda Prabhu, the original Shyamasunda from 67. We were in Chaupati Temple about a year ago, and he knew I had that tooth, so he told me about an occasion when he also got a tooth. I think this was in 1970 when Prabhupada flew from Los Angeles to Japan for the first time. So Shyamasunda was Prabhupada's secretary. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was also part of the party, and because he was a householder at that time. So Prabhupada was sitting, Shyamasunda was next to him, Tamal was next to him. So Shyam told me that midway through the flight, he suddenly looked around and he noticed Prabhupada had his hand in his mouth. Now Srila Prabhupada never put his hands in his mouth. You know, the mouth is considered to be muchi. And even when Prabhupada ate, he would take little bits of prasadam and kind of, you know, pop it in rather than stick it in. And I, you know, you never saw Prabhupada lick his fingers or anything, you know, gross like that. So he saw now Prabhupada's got his hand in his mouth and he's kind of moving around. And then all of a sudden, he pulls a tooth out right on the aeroplane. And then he just turned around and he dropped it into Shyamasunda's hand. Now he was amazed. And Tamal was looking also. He was amazed. And then he asked, he told Shyamasundar, he was looking at the tooth, he said, hey, he said, can I have that? So Shyamasundar told me, he said, I wasn't attached, so I just gave it to him. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj had that tooth, and he actually eventually wore it around his neck. He put it in one of those little capsules. And then, of course, you know, when he left his body, he wrote it in his will that he was to be put into samadhi with that tooth. And so that's where that one is. Other teeth, there was one devotee here, Padmagaba Prabhu. When I was living here in LA in 91, 92, one evening he came banging on my door. I opened up. He said, look what I've got. He came in. He just purchased from some other devotee, Lalitanath. He just purchased from him a set of Prabhupada's shoes, Prabhupada's cartels. They were the same cartels that I'd carried around for a year and a half when I was traveling with Prabhupada. And also Prabhupada's tooth. So he'd gotten this tooth. It was encased in a clear block of resin. Somehow or another, Lalitanath had got it, and he sold it. Padmagaba paid him $2,000, you know, for the items. I told him, I said, if I'd known this was for sale, I would have paid $2,000 just for the cartels. I already had a tooth, so I wasn't worried about that. But anyway, so I presume that Padma's still got that tooth somewhere. And then the only other one that I heard about, and I've still not ever got this confirmed, is that when they built Prabhupada's palace in New Vrindavan, when they put Prabhupada's murti in there, the Kitnananda had one of his teeth that he put in underneath Prabhupada's murti. So I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what I heard. Anyway, so there were a few teeth around. And you can see what Prabhupada was going through. You know, he would just pull them out, or they would get so loose they'd fall out. He'd just put them away and just go on with his work. No dentist, nothing. Although, you'll see that Prabhupada did have some gold work done. Now, Dhananjaya Prabhu told me that he thought that that had been done. I don't know whether it was done in Japan or whether it was done in London or someplace. But they persuaded Prabhupada to, you know, have some work done on his teeth. So he had some gold work done. And then apparently afterwards Prabhupada said, never again. It was so inconvenient, you know, if you have a bridge done or a root canal or stuff like that, you keep your mouth open, you know, for hours practically, you know, it practically cracks your jaw. Anyway, Prabhupada didn't find it very enjoyable experience. He preferred to just, you know, tolerate his teeth just rotting away and falling out. So, anyway, that's the other problem that Prabhupada had. Again, this thing about teeth came up. September the 5th, 1976, Prabhupada was back in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was going over all the budgets for the temple. The Vrindavan temple at that time had been opened about 16 months or so. And he was still trying to train the devotees up how to manage it properly. Every time he came, he would get into all the finest details about the budgets, the standards of deity worship, the standard of the prasadam, the restaurant, the running of the guest house, which was at that point a complete failure. So he would get into the management very, very heavily. And on this particular occasion, he was so determined to cut the expenses that he even went so far as to say that soap and toothpaste were not required, like purchasing them for the devotees. Why soap, he said. He was being sarcastic. Of course, one of the pastimes of some of the devotees, they used to like to go and stay in Radhakund, which Prabhupada heartily and very vocally disapproved of. He didn't like the devotees going and living in Radhakund. He wanted them there at our temple. So he said, why buy soap? You were so a devotee of Radhakund, why do you require soap? You're going to Radhakund or Narakakund? This is nonsense. You take some earth from the Radhakund or Vrindavan, this Vrindavan Duli. So why do you require soap? And Neem Dantan, this is the neem twigs for the teeth. He said, I was doing Neem Dantan until my teeth fell out. So you know that I was collecting that neem. Now it is impossible. So that also, I have manufactured my own toothpaste. I purchase only the brush, and I make my toothpaste at home. I never use any toothpaste. Even in my young days, I never used it. So you have seen practically. It is not that now I have become a sannyasi. When I was a grihastha, I never used it. So if you cannot use Neem Dantan, then you can use this paste, means Prabhupada's formula. I will tell you the formula for my toothpaste. It is very simple. So that was one economy measure, economy saving measure. Yeah, make your own toothpaste. Don't have to go out and buy it. Let's see. Again, when we were in Tehran, August the 12th, again this thing came up about the teeth. And as we were preparing to leave, this was on August the 12th, Prabhupada went over some of the details how to make his toothpaste with Harikesh. He had been the first to make it for him. So Harikesh laughed at the suggestion that instead of using calcium carbonate, Prabhupada suggested that we could use the bitter neem powder that I had prepared earlier. He didn't think that anybody would be able to tolerate the taste. Because in those days, we had no, you know, conception about eating bitter things. I remember when I first got Prabhupada's remnants, you know, I joined the party, there was some Kerala, bitter melon. I could hardly eat it because I had no experience. In the West, we don't have that conception, you know, of eating bitter things. It could be very nice. After being with Prabhupada for some time, I learned how to appreciate that. But anyway, so same with neem. Prabhupada sometimes would suggest to us, just eat one or two neem leaves every day and you'll always be healthy. And then I pulled a face and I said, but who can actually do that? And Prabhupada said, no, it's with practice you can do. So now he was suggesting use the neem powder as a substitute for calcium carbonate, as a base for the toothpaste. So I reminded Prabhupada of what he had said in London about his toothpaste. You said your teeth were so rotten that they all want to fall out, but the toothpaste won't allow them. Prabhupada grinned. Yes, actually my teeth have all gone bad. It is useless. But on account of this toothpaste, it is still working. He gave a laugh. Otherwise, according to dental science, it has to be all extracted. There is no other remedy. If you go to the dentist, immediately he will say, extract all of these and have a new set, artificial. So I know that, but I don't want to extract. As far as possible, use them and then let them fall out automatically. Shri Shri Gaunitai, Shri Shri Rukmini Dwarkadish, Jagannath Baladev Subhadradevi Ki Jai. So let them fall out automatically, as so many have fallen out. 50% already fallen out, 25% shaking, and still I am eating. So otherwise, according to dental science, I should not eat any salt. In Bengal, there is a word that when the teeth is rotten, then your eating is gone. You cannot digest, you cannot eat. If the food stuff is not properly chewed, then it causes this digestive disturbance. Digestive disturbance means so many diseases will come from that. So this coughing is also a digestive disturbance. I know that. Is that because your liver is not working? I asked Prabhupada, remembering the doctor's opinion in New York. Prabhupada agreed. He said, yes. He said, this is the old man's disease. Liver does not work nicely. Teeth does not work nicely. There is susceptibility to cold. Old age. So all of my young friends, they are all now died. Nobody is living. Only one or two still. So you know that Dinanath, he came. So this was Dinanath Mullick, one of Prabhupada's old friends. We had seen him at the beginning of the year. So Prabhupada said, he remembered him. He said, so he's 75 or 76. He's a little younger than me. But he was saying, old age, that's it. You know, don't expect anything's going to work properly anymore. And all of his friends at that point had died. So that's problems with the teeth. That was ongoing. Kidneys, we've already talked about. Another problem was, as he mentioned here, this problem with mucus, another old person's disease. So on July the 1st, 76, Prabhupada was in New Brindavan. He didn't take his walk today, and his Bhagavatam discourse lasted only 15 minutes. He is still weak and congested with mucus. Then 3 days later, July the 4th, we were in Washington, D.C. The devotees took Prabhupada to the Chesapeake and Ohio Canal in Great Falls Park for his morning walk. Although it is midsummer, there's still a slight chill, and he was well wrapped up in a pullover, chadar, and woolen hat. His respiratory system is quite blocked with mucus, which makes his voice sometimes thick and husky. Then, next visit was to New York, July the 17th. I mentioned this. The GBC came and dealt with one last item on their agenda, Srila Prabhupada himself. Concerned about his health, they requested him not to travel or to give classes and to rest in New York until his health improves. Prabhupada modestly accepted their concern for him. He tipped his head and said, "I have no objection." So that was on the 17th of July. But then on the 20th, then Prabhupada had this big initiation. And it seems that whenever he has one big initiation, he becomes afflicted with some kind of physical ailment. He now has a heavy cold, which is worsening. It was bad enough today to warrant that he did not have his usual massage with oils. Instead, he had me give him a dry one so that he wouldn't have to take a bath. He prepared to depart from the temple at 6 p.m. for the evening flight to London. His GBC and senior men, however, came to petition him to remain in New York and rest until he got his health back. Some suggested that he retire from all travel and engagements for a few months. They said that even the airlines advise against traveling with a cold. Air conditioning and the pressurized cabins have an adverse effect, especially on the ears, which become blocked during the descent. Having a cold makes it difficult to clear them, and the pressurization brings dizziness and sometimes air sickness. But His Divine Grace politely shrugged aside all of their suggestions as he waited by the elevator door. He stepped inside, surrounded by as many sannyasis and GBC men that could fit in there with him, and he began his descent. He turned to them, and he said with complete clarity and gravity, "I simply want the benediction, like Arjuna, to fight for Krishna to the last breath." He said it with such a deep conviction that all of us fell utterly silent in appreciation of his full surrender to the Lord and the great sacrifice that he continues to make in the service of Krishna for ours and the world's benefit. So then that was it. I've already described how he got very sick when he arrived in London. And so he had to spend the first 2 or 3 days virtually in bed. So as soon as we arrived at the manor, then Prabhupada noted, because his quarters were up on the upper floor, so he was faced with a steep climb up the steps to get there. And to save him from that, then we asked him to stand for a minute, and we got a chair. And then Prabhupada sat on the chair. But because we weren't really experienced in, you know, lifting him up on that, it took us a minute to get it organized. So I was going to grab hold of the back of the chair, and then I had one man each on the two front legs. But somehow or another, it took us too long to get it coordinated. Prabhupada was feeling so bad that he just stood up again and then just went off up the steps by himself, left us at the bottom holding the chair. So we had to run up after him. So as soon as he got in to his room, then he immediately took rest for the remainder of the day. He took no prasadam, no massage, and received no visitors. Except, however, he did see Niranjan Das, a young Indian college student, and one of his oldest disciples here, Chiradakshai Vishnu, who was a middle-aged Indian businessman who had joined in the London Yatra in 1969. He was sitting out on the lawns, and Prabhupada had seen him through the window and called for him to come up. While Prabhupada rested in his bed, then he discussed with them whether a Gujarati Ayurvedic doctor could be brought. Chiradakshai Vishnu had his son bring from their home in London some Ayurvedic medicine, Chaiwan Prash, which is good for congestion and chest ailments, and acts as a general tonic, and also some Ayurvedic cough drops. Niranjan also gave Prabhupada powdered medicine called Sitapaladi Churna, which he mixed with honey and crushed cardamom into a paste. In addition, we made a hot ginger drink with a little honey for him. Prabhupada requested that we give him these medicines every day, as they seem to have a salutary effect. The British weather certainly doesn't seem conducive to Prabhupada's quick recovery. Although it's mid-July and there's been a drought here for 2 months, the daytime is barely warm and it grew surprisingly chilly in the evening. So that was on our arrival. So then July 22nd, after his prolonged rest, Prabhupada seems to have recovered a little this morning. Although he decided to greet the deities, it was a great strain on him. He had heart palpitations coming back up the stairs. He is still very weak. Later, he attempted to eat some breakfast, but he only managed 2 spoonfuls of fruit. He refused his massage and bathed by wiping himself with a sponge. He ate no lunch, save for a couple of small spoonfuls of khichdi brought by Chiradakshai Vishnu Prabhu, which Prabhupada ate while sitting up at the side of his bed, his plate on his lap. During the day, he called in Harikesh Maharaj, and he told him that he wanted to return immediately to Bombay, for the climate there would suit him more favorably. Extensive inquiries, however, indicated that there were no airline seats available until the 26th, so Prabhupada put off making his decision for the time being. Then on the next day, the 23rd of July, after taking a very small amount of fruit for breakfast, Prabhupada complained of exhaustion. He rested for a long while. Practically speaking, he didn't eat anything for about 3 days. A couple of spoonfuls of khichdi, 2 spoonfuls of fruit. That was it for about 3 days. He rested for a long while. His cold is now subsiding, but only after continually coughing up mucus for over 2 days. He's still very, very weak, but he took his massage for the first time since our arrival, although he continued to wipe himself down with a sponge rather than take a full bath. Then on the 25th, 2 days later, it was Sunday. Prabhupada decided to go ahead with his plans to visit the temple at Bury Place in London. Although he's still very weak and his respiratory tracts are thick with mucus, he went there just to have the darshan of Sri Sri Radha Londoneshwara. So that was kind of interesting. Radha Londoneshwara were the first big deities to be installed in ISKCON. And it was rumored that they were Prabhupada's favorite deities. But, you know, I never personally heard him say that. And actually, when we had gone to New Vrindavan the previous month, there was one devotee there, Kulashekhar Prabhu. He had been one of the early recruits in London in 1969. He was a bit of an eccentric character, kind of wild sometimes. And because he'd been there in London, now he was in New Vrindavan when Prabhupada visited. So he was all very enthusiastic, you know, for everything New Vrindavan. And in New Vrindavan, they had this... that's all right, you do your business. They had this propaganda that Sri Sri Radha, Vrindavan Chandra, the main deities there, were the best deities in ISKCON. You know, the most beautiful deities. There's a transcendental competition between the temples. So Kulashekhar, he had been working on this Brijbasi Spirit, which was a magazine that they used to put out of their own. And on the front cover, they had put this picture of the deities. And so he handed the new copy to Srila Prabhupada. He told him what he was doing for his new service. And then he tried to put in a plug, you know, for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. So he told Prabhupada, he said, you know, even though Radha Londoneshwara is so beautiful, now I've been here in New Vrindavan, I think that, you know, Radha Vrindavan Chandra must be even more beautiful than, you know, Radha Londoneshwara. So then, you know, he was hoping Prabhupada would say yes, but Prabhupada, he just very carefully worded it. He said, Radha Londoneshwara have village beauty, And sorry, Radha, Vrindavan, Chandra have village beauty. And Radha, Lundaneshwara have town beauty. And that was all he said. So he wouldn't be drawn, you know, into making a statement. And although Kulashekar, again, he tried to kind of get Prabhupada to say something that they could use, you know, for their propaganda that Radha, Vrindavan, Chandra are the best deities. Prabhupada wouldn't go along with it. So now when we arrived in London, and have you got the brakes on or what? Anyway, so despite Prabhupada's illness, he decided he wanted to go into London. It was a long trip, just to see Radha Lundaneshwara. So on the way in, then I was thinking about, you know, this incident with Kulashekar in New Vrindavan. So I asked Prabhupada, I said, Radha Lundaneshwara, are they actually your favorite deities? And Prabhupada said, yes, very clearly. And again, there was another time when I asked him later in the year when we were in Calcutta, I asked him the same thing. Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come. I think it was then. And anyway, there was some talk about Radha Lundaneshwara and how Prabhupada, you know, had gone to this man's house and virtually kidnapped the deities and took them. So I asked him again, and Prabhupada again said that they were his favorite deities. So, sorry, Manaji. Anyway, so he went there just to see Radha Lundaneshwara, but he was still very sick. So July 27th, a couple of days later, Jayatirtha showed him pictures of New Vrindavan. Oh, there was an interview. There was an interview with this young man called Mike Robinson. He was from the London Broadcasting Company. And he got a fabulous interview. It was great. Prabhupada said that it contained 90% of our philosophy. And he told the devotees that they should print it and back to Godhead. So at the end of the interview, towards the end, Jayatirtha had shown Mike Robinson some pictures of New Vrindavan. And Mike asked Srila Prabhupada if he found the English weather to be cold. Prabhupada, who was still coughing and full of mucus, told him, "We are accustomed to tropical climate. Heat does not disturb us, but cold disturbs us. We can tolerate extreme heat, 120 degrees, but we cannot tolerate 50 degrees cold." So Mike laughed, because that's the standard there in England. It's always about 50 degrees. If you get a week or two where it's a little bit more, you're lucky. So Mike laughed. He said, "That's cold." So anyway, from London, as I say, we went to New Mayapur. Bhagavan came. He persuaded Prabhupada not to go straight back to Bombay. July 30th, Prabhupada is still weak, and after a very short morning walk, he returned to his quarters without entering the temple room. He's still full of mucus, and he alters his diet frequently to speed his recovery. He told me that the traditional Indian cooking is such that by proper combination of spices and diet, one can cure almost any disease and still enjoy palatable dishes. Then the next day, since we have arrived, Prabhupada has been resting until late in the morning, about 7 a.m. He's not taken a full morning walk since we left New York. This morning, he ate very little for breakfast, and he told us to make all endeavor necessary to prevent him from catching cold. He said that with an old body, it means thin blood, and this turns to mucus. And when there is too much mucus, it blocks the heart, and that is very dangerous. He has spent the last couple of days sitting in the sunshine in his room, but at least he is once again having his massage in the sunshine and taking his full bath. So that's mucus. And as Prabhupada said, when you get old, blood gets thin, immediately you get too much mucus, bad digestion, so many problems. Another ongoing problem. So I think it's 10 to 9. There's work going on, so I'll finish at this point. Tomorrow, because it's the festival, I'm going to be speaking at 10 o'clock till 11:30. We'll probably pick a different topic so that the devotees that are newly arrived, then, you know, they don't have to come in halfway through this topic. But then after Saturday, I think I'm speaking on Monday morning, and we'll probably pick up again from where we leave off today on this question of health. Because there's still the whole section on what Prabhupada had to say about, you know, how devotees should deal with their own health problems. And there's a few good examples from that. So we'll pick up. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Did Prabhupada say that he liked a deity the most because he wanted to encourage the devotees in that temple? I just gave you the example. He didn't go along with Kulashekhar's assertion. Yeah, politely he said, Vrindavan Chandra have village beauty and Lundaneshwara have town beauty. And then, because when I asked Prabhupada were Lundaneshwara's favorite deities, there was only us in the car. Harikesh was there, but there were no other devotees there. So he wasn't saying it for anybody else. He was just saying they were his favorite deities. Of course, Krishna is Krishna. Prabhupada saw Krishna, you know, in every temple. But maybe because of the, you know, the leela that he'd had in getting Lundaneshwara and bringing them, you know, for installation in the Bury Street temple, that may have had something to do with it. He had a special relationship with Radharasa Bihari also, because of all the troubles and, you know, strife that they had to go through to get that Juhu Beach land secured. Prabhupada told us, he said that, because he was very clever in what he did. He put a deposit on the land. There were buildings on the land, but they were all occupied. They had tenants. So Prabhupada had the devotees move on and live in a tent on the land. And he'd had this big pandal at Cross Maidan. And Radharasa Bihari had actually, you know, been put on the stage and they were being offered puja every day. So they continued with that worship after the pandal. So they were virtually installed at the Cross Maidan pandal. So they had a flat in Akash Ganga, this building called Akash Ganga. And then they got the Juhu Beach land. So Prabhupada had them build a temporary, it was a shack. That's all it was. It was just like a simple brick structure. Radharasa Bihari were inside, tin roof, you know, a little darshan area, again made of tin and steel poles, and a funny little kitchen at the back. So very, very temporary. But Prabhupada knew once the deities are on the land, that's it. We'll never be moved off. And, of course, there were attempts to move us off. There was an attack on the temple. A demolition crew was sent with police. They arrested all the devotees. They ripped the roof off the temple whilst Radharasa Bihari were inside. They were actually going to demolish the whole structure and throw the deities off the property. And then just at that moment, somebody else came with another squad of police. And they had another order from the court refuting the demolition order, and then it was stopped, so the deities were saved. So there's huge problems in getting that land in Juhu Beach. And Prabhupada told us that he had gone to Radharasa Bihari, and he had prayed to them. He said, "My dear sir," he said, "if you kindly just sit here tight and don't move, I promise you I will build you a wonderful temple." So he made a pact with Radharasa Bihari, and of course he fulfilled his promise. Anyway, I'm sure that there were other, you know, pastimes that Prabhupada had with various deities, but that's a couple that I know about. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Yeah.
The surfers. Okay, yeah, just a brief account. Of course, Prabhupada was going for his morning walks to Magic Island. It's like a promontory down in Honolulu, in the bay. And there was an area right next to that where the surfers used to gather. So when we get out there just after dawn, and of course all the surfers are out there already, you know, swimming on the waves and what have you. So in his class, there were a couple of devotees, or I guess, I don't know whether they were initiated or visitors to the temple, but they were surfers. So Prabhupada made a comment one day about what he called the surferers, or the sufferers. He said, they call it surfing. He said, I call it suffering. And he said, if you want to play in the waves, he said, then you take birth as a fish. That's all. Yeah. He said, you like playing in the waves. So he said, then, you know, this human form, this is not the right body, the better form. It's all right, you take so much enjoyment skipping in the waves, so then in your next birth, you'll take birth as a fish. So the couple of, the parties that were there that liked surfing, they were kind of sitting there because they knew Prabhupada meant it. And Prabhupada noted that. And he said, somebody has taken birth as a fish. So just to emphasize, he said, somebody has become a fish. So don't think it's not going to happen. It happens. And I'll tell you another story. This is not from Prabhupada, but we had a devotee, Balaram Prabhu, that joined in Sydney in 1972. He was a surfer. There were quite a few surfers that joined at that time. So he told us a story one time that before he, became interested in Krishna consciousness, they were into kind of like these pseudo-spiritual experiences. So they had gotten this Ouija board. You know what a Ouija board is, yeah? Yeah, it's like some, supposed to be, they say some kind of black magic kind of thing. But the idea is that you, on the board, there are all the letters of the alphabet. And then you get a glass or an object and you put it on the board. Then you invoke whatever spirit there is around. And you ask questions. And then the glass moves and, it spells out the answer to your question. So they had a friend. He was an up-and-coming surfer in Australia, I guess in the late 60s or early 70s. His name was Bobby Brown. So they, after surfing, they'd go down to the pub and, they'd get drunk and get in fights, do all the things that young people do. So they got in a fight. So somebody hit this Bobby Brown with a broken glass, slit his throat, and he died. Yeah. So sometime later, then, Balaram and these boys are there. They got the Ouija boards working. So then at one point, one of them asked, what happened to Bobby Brown? So the glass started moving, and it went F-I-S-H. Fish. Like that. And they all went, wow, fish, far out. So they thought, they said, he made it. Anyway, Prabhupada's comment was that, it's unfortunate. If you die like that, thinking about your surfing activities, and it's possible, yeah, then you take birth as a fish. And then it's millions of lifetimes. He said that, millions of lifetimes before you get back to the human form. It's the same as any other material addiction. Chant Hare Krishna, get a higher taste. Swimming in the ocean is all right. It's nice, but don't get obsessed with it. That's the whole point. Yeah, but not with flippers and surfboards and wetsuits. And Lord Chaitanya used to bathe in the ocean in Puri. Yeah. He wasn't surfing, though. For a bath, it's all right. A little sport, Okay, we'll finish at that point. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And just to mention, all the material that we're using for these seminars, they're all from this book that I've been writing, A Transcendental Diary. This is volume 5. This was just, it came out year before last. I'm working on volume 6, and there'll be 7 altogether. So these will be, if anybody wants to, you know, read about Prabhupada's pastimes, get a closer look at his life, more intimate dealings. All the five volumes will be available tomorrow and the next day out on the store with the Bhaktivedanta archives. So if you'd like to get any copies, you're more than welcome. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Eleventh. Right on the top floor. Right on the top floor. Oh, you were? Right. Yeah. All right, very good. What's your name? What is your name?
Nimai.
Who's your parents? Sunita. Well, the only other Sunita that I knew was Tausan Krishna Prabhu's wife. Yeah. Another Sunita. All right. All right. Very good.
Nice to see you. Thank you. Some service.